Hello, everybody, and welcome to Karate Cafe, episode 30 for the week of July 24th, 2006. Right off the bat, I'd like to apologize for last week's podcast, the computer ate my podcast. We had a little bit of technical difficulty with some of our editing software, and it didn't work properly, and for the most part, we lost the podcast. I'm going to see if I can save some of the conversation. It was really good between Paul, Gene, and myself about traditional martial arts. This week, Gene and I just got back from our summer camp in the Hombu Dojo in New Jersey, and it was a good camp, and Friday night before camp started, we sat down with some seniors, karateka, and had a really good conversation. It always came back to kata. That was the interesting part for me, is it really brought home how important kata is in traditional martial arts. It was a long conversation. It's going to be split into three parts. It was very interesting. I think after you hear the first part, you'll want to hear the second and third and following weeks. So without any further ado, here it is.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to episode 31 of Karate Cafe's podcast. We're here at our Hombu Dojo in West Paterson, New Jersey, and we're in the company of some pretty impressive martial artists. Collectively, there's got to be many, many years of experience here. I'm just going to ask everyone to just go around the room and introduce themselves and maybe give us your rank.
Ralph Sacco, fifth dan.
Carlo Romaniello, fourth dan.
Paul Algier, fifth dan.
Tony Arena, sixth dan.
Bob Hurton, eighth dan.
Bob Wilkie, seventh dan.
Okay. Great. Thanks, guys. We can start with Kyoshi Hurton. Kyoshi, you first started training in the martial arts in Okinawa back in the 60s. Could you talk a little bit about what it was like to train in Okinawa back then, and maybe compare it to what it's like training in Okinawa now? I know you just went last year, a couple years ago.
Well, the actual training is exactly the same.
Okay.
Nothing has ever changed in the dojo. The training in Okinawa when I trained in the 60s, the big difference was the old dojo seemed at that time to have a whole lot more, less Americans and more Okinawans. Okay, and now when the Americans show up, sensei, I'm not sure if he calls his people or whatever, but they don't show up. And you end up training by yourselves, just you guys, just us and sensei. Very few of the Okinawan seniors come in and train. When we trained in 04, there was 19 of us, which might be the reason he does it, because it's not a huge school and 19 people on the floor. We had to split up to do kata. But when I trained in the 60s, you had maybe at any given night three Americans training, and the rest would be Okinawan students. And during the day, same thing. And now, like I said, whenever you go, because sensei doesn't just, you can't just show up. He's got to know you're coming, and he's got to approve, because he's got so many students around the world that he just can't leave it to say, well, okay, anybody can show up whenever they want. Because if I show up with 20 students and Pat Haley shows up with 20 students, there's no room for us. So now it's mostly, you know, the Americans. But the training itself has never changed. Kata is the most important part of the training. And as sensei got older, I think, or maybe not even have to do with that, as when the Americans show up, it's all kata. He doesn't look at anything but our katas and straighten out the katas. Make sure that we're all doing the katas exactly the same, correct, and so on. When I trained in the 60s, it was kata and sparring. There were no yakusuka drills. Yakusuka drills weren't invented by him until around 19... He introduced the first yakusukus to me in 1973 on his first visit to the United States. And they were really, they were originally developed to teach to the Americans only. Up to 1989, when 1989 I went back for a visit, the Okinawans didn't know what they were. They knew that they were out there, but they had never seen them.
Why do you think he only wanted to teach them to Americans?
And you figure that out, and you can figure Sensei out 100%. I mean, I can't figure Sensei out, and I've been with him for 40 years. But I don't really know why they were taught only to the Americans. Maybe he figured the Americans wanted to fight. Fight, 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 fight. And in Okinawa in the 60s, that's, you know, we trained, we did kata, and we sparred. We did kata, and we sparred. And if you wanted to, you in between that, you went out and hit on the Makawaras. But there was nothing, no kind of drills, no kind of blocking drills. And you learned your basics from kata. First night in the dojo, you learned how to do Naihachi Shodan, period. You didn't know how to kick, you didn't know how to punch, you didn't know how to stand, you didn't know how to do anything. Everything was taught through the katas. And then maybe he thought that the Americans needed the drills to satisfy their sparring, you know, that they wanted to fight so much. I'm not really sure why they were invented for them. But originally they were just the Americans. Now everybody practices. Yeah. And also maybe he felt that we were better guinea pigs than anybody else. I'm not sure. But Yakusuku didn't get introduced till 73. And after that, it was...
I'd like to go back to a point that you made on kata. So kata is the most important part of karate. We just did a podcast on traditional martial arts. So all you guys, what would you say to maybe somebody from mixed martial arts or some of these eclectic styles who say that kata is just dancing, it doesn't teach you self-defense, it doesn't teach you how to fight? Well,
they don't understand kata, period. Anybody that says kata is a waste or it's just dancing, okay, they don't understand kata. They look at and you can't blame that on them, you have to blame it on their teacher. Whoever showed them kata didn't explain kata and didn't make kata important to them. A lot of schools in America, a lot of schools I see in the United States, if you ask people why they do kata, they'll tell you to get promoted. And that's the truth. And I mean, some of these guys have traveled around. Tony's traveled around to different places, and Bob's traveled around places, and they'll tell you, we do kata to get promoted. Now, you would expect that answer from kids, but not from 35-year-olds.
If they do kata to get promoted, what do they do with the rest of their time?
Spar
and drills.
Self-defense techniques. A lot of schools put their training into three categories. Sparring, kata, and self-defense.
And they see no connection
between them? No, they see no connection between them.
They see no correlation between any of the three of them.
Now, we discussed before we started taping that a lot of styles don't do an oyo, don't do a practical application.
Right.
Do you think that's the reason, that they don't see?
They don't know. It's not just a lot of styles. I mean, even in our own style, I would be willing to bet that there are no more than maybe three or four Shorinkan dojos in the country that practice anything except their katas and sparring and yakusuku drills. No bonkai's done in a han like we do, in a small group like we do. Okay? Yeah, we got that from Iha Sensei. And we didn't do it until we hooked up with Iha Sensei, until we started. We've only been doing those since the 90s. Up to before that, bonkai for us was one move out of a kata. Let's take the move and make it work. Or, a couple of moves out of a kata. But we never set up in a han like we do now and do those.
But to go back to kata, though, I think one of the things, because I came from two different arts before I started training with Kyoshin Herden. And one of the things that I saw, even in a traditional Japanese system before I came here, again, there was no direct correlation between kata, self-defense, fighting, and drills. And then I went to another style, same thing. I didn't see any direct correlation between kata, self-defense, drills, and fighting. And then when I started doing Shorinkan first, there was a direct correlation between kata, bonkai, and self-defense. You started seeing the same movements you saw in self-defense from kata and the same movements in sparring from kata and from bonkai. And that's, I think that's what makes it might be biased, but makes us different and special. To go add to that, when I first started teaching recruits in the law enforcement field, and I had to learn the defensive tactics program that they put together, each and every one of those techniques I learned, I found in a kata. And I was able to put that together and demonstrate it. And then some people that used to come in and who used to train and who used to have the same philosophy about kata, oh, kata's useless. I said, the technique you're learning right now, let me show you this kata. And some people understood, who trained and who came into in traditional, who knew pinans and knew some pasais, even Japanese, there might be some different accents to demonstrate that.
You just mentioned that the other day on our forums, on our website, how in your profession you saw the correlation between what you had to do on the street and the kata.
Yes. And I think what happens is there's a misconception is sparring is good, adrenal stress training is good, we all do it, what they call real self-defense, which that doesn't make sense to me because what's fake self-defense? But anyway, real or street fighting, which again, I don't know about you, but I don't like to fight concrete because it hurts. you know, people make these names to these things. Basically, self-defense is keeping yourself, making sure that you don't get hurt. And people say, well, if you don't practice it, it's not going to happen. Well, we do practice it. Kata, you're practicing it. You're drilling it to the point. It's a misnomer, but a lot of people use the term muscle memory. That's what it is. It becomes reaction. I consider kata not only a catalog of your techniques, but a principle and concept. In other words, is you learn the technique, but you learn the principle behind the technique that you can apply it over a multitude of attacks. So if it put me in position, I used it. I didn't think about it. I never planned it. Never trained for it. It happened. This individual attacked me a certain way, and I was able to apply two. Actually, it was interesting. It was just two suspects in two different times within a week attacked me the same way, and I was able to apply the same technique, and it worked. So what I attribute that to? Thousands and thousands and thousands of repetition of a kata.
Now, it's interesting because you have a lot of mixed martial artists that say that kata doesn't apply because it's hundreds of years old, or, you know, it's not modern. And here you were in a modern situation, and you took something that's hundreds of years old and it applied to it.
Well, it's not modern. What makes a punch outdated? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, or what makes a front kick outdated?
Why is having survived the test of time for hundreds of years been effective in all situations?
Exactly.
Why is that somehow a negative?
So that goes back to what I said. What I said to Gene before when he asked, about the question about the kata. People say, kata's. The famous line. I'm not sure anybody actually ever said this, or somebody brought it up and printed it in a magazine, and it just became popular. Was kata was for fighting samurai warriors in the rice paddies. Well, you know, number one, I have never come across any rice paddies in Okinawa. I'm sure there's some. There are some there. But Okinawa imports most of their rice, number one. So there's not too many rice paddies.
Sweet potato fields.
Yeah. Pineapple fields, yeah. Sugar cane fields, yeah. Okay. But it's a silly statement. You know, I mean, you say, well, okay, kata is useless because it's old. All right. Yeah. So an elbow technique to the back of the head is no longer useful in modern day. And that's what he was talking about in the self-defense he did on those two suspects.
Yeah, exactly.
He elbowed them in the back of the head, and they went down like freight trains.
Not to take away anything, and we all respect them, not to take anything from mixed martial arts. One of the things I stress to recruits is the mixed martial arts, it's a sport. It's bound by rules.
Right.
Great, phenomenal guys. They're guys, I won't want to mess with them. They're great shape. I enjoy it. I play around a little bit with people that you know, we do a little mixed stuff. We'll spar. We'll go down to the ground. We'll grapple. I've been training in jiu-jitsu for reasons related to what I do. But to me, it's a sport, and people that will do it will only get so far. You know, a sport will take you so far in life. You only do a sport for so long in life. I think this, it becomes a part of you. Yeah. This is your life. This is me. Sean Rue is me.
Well, it's always struck me when you train for a tournament, working with muscle memory. If you're training for a tournament, your muscles are remembering that you stop after a point is called or whatever.
Right.
You know, and that's not what we train for.
Well, mixed martial arts, though, that what was that, UFC stuff?
Yes.
They don't stop after nothing. Okay. I mean, I have to say that those guys are in phenomenal shape and incredible fighters, okay, as far as having guts and you know, they don't give up. Scott and I watched, a week ago?
Yeah.
What were those guys' names? They fought... Two
championship. Did you
big
see
guy,
Arlovski?
Big guy.
Arlovski.
Big guy one and big guy two.
No.
Sylvian Arlovski?
No.
No. It was actually Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
And Chuck Liddell.
Ortiz.
Yeah. Ortiz. Ken Shamrock.
Shamrock took. I'm an Athon. I'd have quit. I'd have gave up a long time before Shamrock gave up. He didn't actually. He never did give up.
That man had a heart.
Doesn't give up.
His face looked like hamburger. But it's still, like Tony said, sport. It's a rough sport, but it's sport. There's rules.
My opinion between TMA, why TMA will always stick with you, and I remember something Iha Sensei, I think, said to you, is, again, sport aspect of it as opposed to a traditional aspect of it. This is with you. This becomes part of you. I think you said something to the effect of you really appreciate Sean Rue after you're 40. Right. Those guys after that 41, 42, you're old for the sport.
Right.
You have to retire. Chuck Liddell retired after the last UFC fight. He lost at the age of 42. That's only a year older than me. You know, I can do this till, you know, I'm 85, hopefully.
I hate these kids.
It beats you down. This you can do, I don't know. So hopefully you don't get buried in a gi.
What I found with kata, what a lot of people don't seem to understand, the warrior bankai is the bankai is how, that they feel that the kata is exactly how you're going to fight. You're going to start open ready, you're going to step back, you're going to step punch. And the correlation between going in four directions. Well, how do you know the attackers aren't going to be one, two, three, four? They're not going to be, but you practice going in every direction.
Right.
So you learn the technique.
Plus... See, goes back to what you asked before, you know, about people saying, well, kata is useless and so on. Though the people that say that look at, even if they watched Oyubonkai or Bonkai, they would say the same thing because they're not really looking past that pattern.
They say it's prearranged, right.
And how do you know the person's coming in from that angle and so on and so forth? And they don't, so they really don't understand that kata is a training tool to give you technique, timing, balance, speed, power. You develop those things and automatic response, like Tony's been talking about, like he used in fighting in a real, you know, self-defense. When I was a police officer, same thing. You know, a few times I had a fight. That's another story that goes up to throws a myth. What's that show? There's a show on Mythbusters.
Mythbusters.
Something like that. People say, well, you know, if you got a fight, would you really use your karate? I've been doing this for 43 years. I don't know how to fight any other way. Anybody that's been doing this for 5 years or more has forgotten how to fight any other way. That muscle memory is there forever. What's that from? That's from kata.
Let me throw something else in the mix. Kata, loosely translated as forms, repetition of forms, drills. Okay, there's single man kata, two man kata, multiple persons kata. What happens is it's just people, in my opinion, are lazy. Because kata is something that you can do by yourself, and if there's nobody to motivate you, you won't do it.
No, sensei, they're unenlightened.
I'm sorry, I stand corrected. But when you have to do something with it, think about it. If you do kata and you're tired by yourself, you kind of pace yourself. If you're doing a drill with a person, you got no choice but to keep pace with them. Okay? So I think what happens is why the popularity of mixed martial arts is people throw themselves in with a partner and they have to do randori. They have to do these live training and they know, okay, well, this pushes me. You know, kata, that makes me tired. That's lazy.
Well, that's ironic because kata is the one thing you can do full force and not hurt anybody.
Exactly. You know, you're by yourself.
Something I found with kata, since we've had the opportunity to study some jujitsu, is as a learning tool. When you're working with a partner, and I've done some judo, or you're working with a partner, sometimes you tend to forego technique and try to use muscle or try to use different mm-hmm. things. And you might get away with it with the person you're working with on that day. You might not, but by kata, you can actually perfect form and just get that repetition. Well, maybe my leg wasn't straight, but I was strong enough to take the guy over. Maybe I took this person over. Maybe another person I won't. Just the circular, the movement, you know, twisting your hips at the right time. You can go as far as breathing at the right time. You know, keeping your head in the right position. So many little things that it's just, you know, since Sensei Gene and I have been studying with Sensei Ernie, that, you know, we're doing moves, jujitsu moves, and we're coming up with katas. They're coming out of the katas.
It's like Tony said, you know, when in the police training manual for recruits, they have a set routines of things you have to teach. And then when you're doing it, when you're teaching it, if you've trained, you start to, you say, well, this is from Pasha Sho, or this is from Pidyan Shodan, or, you know, you start picking out techniques that came from the kata somewhere. Even as long as they're not outdated. I'd like to just bounce back just a little bit further back to where, when we were talking about most dojos don't do bonkai the way we do it now. Okay, and we have to credit that to Iha Sensei. Iha Sensei gave us that, and we've played with it and messed around with it, and we've done it, you know, upside down, backwards, and forwards for a long time now, for about 12, 15 years, 16 years. But Paul trained with a gentleman who originally trained in Okinawa under Nagasato Sensei. That was his first teacher. Pat Hayden, and Pat trained with Nagasato Sensei, made Shodan in Okinawa, which Americans came and went, and in the droves they came in and they signed up, and when somebody taught them Daihachi Shodan, a lot of them never showed up after that, and then some stayed, and not a lot stayed to Shodan, and very few stayed beyond Shodan, but he stayed to Shodan, came back and taught up in Rhode Island on his own with no one around to help him, okay? And I would like Paul to comment on what the training was like in those days, you know? Mostly what it consisted of.
Sensei Pat was into kata, and then when we finished that, we'd do some more kata. We'd go up the katas, come down the katas. Once in a while, he would do a conditioning called walking. Walking with kicks, jumping in, back fist, whatever, but it was mostly kata, and then we fight. The Yakuzukos were around you.
Which is what the training was like in the 60s in Okinawa. Pat came back. Pat was actually in Okinawa before I was. And he came back. He wasn't in the dojo when I got there. So he must have came back prior to 64. 63. He probably came back around 62. And that was exactly what training was in Okinawa. It was kata, more kata. In between, Sensei would give you a break. Or when you were a lower belt, you didn't know all the katas. And you would go, you know, you'd go up to what you knew, and then he'd say, okay, he'd give you a hand signal and tell you, okay, you know, go away, basically. And it was up to you to go do something. If you went back and did nothing, it was only a matter of time. You did that once, maybe you got away with it, and that second time you got away with it, and maybe the third time you'd be back there standing around with your picking your nose, and a black belt would come over that spoke English and say, Sensei said you should go home now. Because if you weren't going to practice, he figured you might as well go home. So what he wanted you to do was go back, work on your katas, work on them by yourself, or go outside and hit the makawaras. There was five makawaras outside, all different types, and there was a heavy bag hanging outside, or spar. And if he saw you standing around, a lot of times, if there was somebody that could mentor you,
mentorship is a good thing,
and give you a classification. Is that what that was? Sorry, a clarification on why you shouldn't be standing around. He would come over and say, "Okay, you and you, spa," and he'd walk away.
And things would get clarified.
And you got clarified quickly. And the next time he told you not to, you know, that you had done all your copies that you knew, and okay, now you're on your own. You found something to do real quick. Because you no longer wanted to have any more clarifications, or beyond that would be an intervention. Right? So you didn't want an intervention, no.
It sounds like Okinawan evolution.
Yeah. What did an intervention entail?
Oh. Well, clarification was bad enough, but I took a... What's what regular intervention was? Double intervention.
Then yeah. There's an extreme intervention.
No, I didn't get extreme. I just got a double intervention. When I made Shodan, I was young, and I was a smartass, like most Americans, and thought I knew everything. And my roommate was a black belt in Oichiru. He trained in a dojo, which was right outside the back gate of our airbase. So their classes out there would start later. I would go to Sensei Nagasato's, train, because you could come and go as you want in Okinawa. Okay? It's still that way, all right, today. You can come and go as you want. If you want to train for 2 hours, you can train for 2 hours. If you want to train for half an hour and go home, you can train for half an hour and go home. So I would go to the dojo and train, do all my katas, and, you know, stick around just maybe long enough to make Sensei happy. And then I would get a bus and go to the Uichiru dojo and put on a white belt and train in Uichiru. And I did this for about a couple months. And one night I showed up at the dojo and put my gi on, and Sensei, I went to get in line for kata, and Sensei said, No, Bob-san, you go back. You spot. And I started fighting with, which was strange.
That was the start of the double intervention.
Yeah, it was the beginning of my double intervention. I went back and I started sparring. And when that gentleman got done beating me to death, somebody else stepped up, bowed, and started pounding on me some more. And then I began watching that people were coming in that I hadn't seen in months. And they were putting on their gi, coming out and sparring with me and having their few good shots in, and then taking their gi off and going home. And by the end of the night, I never got to do kata. By the end of the night, the intervention was over. But I didn't know why. I wasn't smart enough to have figured it out. And as I was getting changed, Jiro Shiroma Sensei walked over to me because he spoke English. And all he said to me, and then he walked away and went home, was, Sensei doesn't like his students to train in more than one style. And he went home. And that was an intervention.
That was a double intervention.
Okay. Because it took me, literally took me 3 days, okay, before I could go back to the dojo, because I was black and blue everywhere. And so, you know, they got their point across. You know?
Yeah.
But those are, I don't know if Sensei, I would hope that they still do that.
And that was the first in our series of podcasts from Summer Camp 2006. We hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at karatecafe@gmail.com or join our forums at karatecafe.com and go to forums. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week. Have a good week. Bye.